like a home than a ruin. But if Mern was here, I intended to find him. Chapter 18. Green Corn. The courtyard was small, a soggy stretch of overgrown turf, with spindly trees rising up here and there. In the light of Sepesh's lantern, I could see that the barn was collapsing in on itself, as if something massive had struck it at some point. Bedraggled chickens glared at us from where they sheltered in the ruins. I had just started to wonder what they ate when I saw a mouse streak from cover to scurry towards the house. Several of the fowl pounced with eager clucks. The mouse never stood a chance. "I hate chickens," Sepesh said, as we watched the flock tear their prey apart and fall to squabbling over the pitiful remains. "I'm surprised any of them are still alive." Out in the dark, something trilled. The chickens scattered with panicked indignation. Sepesh swung the lantern about, and there was a splash close to hand. "Leopard eel," she said. "Now we know what eats the chickens." "One mystery down," I said. "Come on." I pushed open the door of the farmhouse. The air inside smelled stale and damp. It was the sort of cold that said no fire had been kindled in the hearth in some time. So why the even spread of ashes? Why were they so thick? I ran my hands along the stones of the hearth. Knotwork sigils had been carved into them. The sigils weren't those I'd seen in town, but they were familiar nonetheless. You couldn't live in Gyron for long without coming to recognize symbols associated with the Everqueen. Sepesh watched me. "Planning to start a fire?" she asked. "No. When you said the locals thought the family was favored, what did you mean?" I asked, as I stirred the ashes in the hearth. There were loose bricks there, an old trick if you wanted to hide something. No way to check, however, with Sepesh standing behind me. I needed to get her to leave, somehow. "Just that. Story was, they were jade bloods, like his lordship. One of the old families, from before Azurites set foot in the Greywater Reach." She sniffed. "Shabby place, though." "But dry," I said. "That suits me at the moment." I looked around. The house was small, not tidy, but clean. A kitchen, a larder, two bedrooms. More than most had in villages like this. I was starting to see why Mern had stayed. There were supplies in the larder, including a hock of salted pork that hadn't been touched by vermin as yet. If Mern had left intentionally, he'd have taken food. That was the first thing you learned in the Free Guild. Food was almost as important as your weapon. I turned the pork on its hook, studying it. Someone had been at it with a knife. Possibly recently. I looked at the small shelves and saw telltale gaps in the supplies. Missing jars, open bags. Someone was raiding these stores regularly. Mern might not be here, but he hadn't gone far. The first bedroom was obviously Mern's. There was barely anything in it beyond a sturdy bed and a heavy trunk. And books. Piles and piles of books. My gaze slid towards the pile nearest the bed. A hint of blue cloth poked out from the pile. I moved the books aside, revealing a blue bundle of cloth, striated with black char marks. It had been a cloak once, I recognized it easily enough, for it had been mine. How Mern had come by it, I couldn't say, but I knew it instantly, as I knew every rip and tear in it, every mark. Carefully, I unwrapped it. Inside were several items, a chain shirt and a breastplate, once gold, now turned black, as if by a great heat. An astral compass that no longer functioned, a bit of marble that I knew had been chopped from a saint's tomb in Gur, and a shawl made from coins, the traditional insignia of the gold griffins. I touched the coins, wondering why Mern had never spent them. Most of them were of Axion denomination. Some were from Gur, others Gyron. A coin from every battlefield we'd shed blood on, and a soldier's pension. One of the oldest traditions of the regiment, brought from the hearthlands of Azir. For the regiment, tradition had been as much a weapon as a pike or handgun. It had been used to keep the troops in line, and to browbeat clients. Tradition kept frightened soldiers in formation as much as discipline or the screams of officers. Tradition said the gold griffins had never broken in open battle. Oh, they'd made their fair share of fighting withdrawals and tactical retreats, but they never broken. Never fled like whipped curs. They'd died standing. There was more besides, the burned remnants of a small book of catechisms, a fire-warped medallion, and the head of a warhammer blasted by the same conflagration that had touched everything else. My hammer. I ran my fingers along the melted seams carved into the sides of the hammer. Though they resembled nothing at all now, I remembered them well enough. Sigmar at war and at rest. Sigmar the triumphant and Sigmar the wrathful. I'd stared at them every day, trying to pull strength from them into myself. Trying to make myself something more than just a man. What's that? Sepesh asked from behind me. Just some old junk. I placed the hammer back amongst the other items. Slowly I rewrapped them and put the bundle back beneath the pile. I turned my attention to the books. They were on a variety of topics. I recognized a few of them. Without thinking, I reached out and picked one up. The book was old. The leather was cracked, the uneven pages crumbling. A book? Sepesh asked. Not just any book. The Sacred Bow by Ferek, I said. I've only read the abridged version. This one, I ran my fingers across the faded gilt on the spine. Ferek had been one of the first Azirites to journey to Gyron, after the gates of Azir opened. His treatise on the folkways and beliefs of the Jade Kingdoms had been so influential that the Church had banned the book. I wondered where Mern had managed to acquire a copy, and why. You don't strike me as much of a reader, Sepesh said. Not these days. I eased through the pages, careful not to tear them. They say Ferek went mad out in the wilderness. A section on Kernoth was marked. I read enough to see the words Hunter's Bower before I snapped it closed. I set the book aside. Anything interesting? Nothing you don't already know. How long has his lordship worshipped the god of the hunt? I drew my knife and crouched beside the trunk. I made short work of the lock and popped it open. Inside was a folded uniform, a battered hauberk, an equally battered helm shaped like a griffin's head, and a sheathed blade. Sepesh leaned against the doorframe.
You want to talk religion now?
Might as well. Never met a worshipper of Kernoth, this side of the Verdian Veldt. I lifted the blade and unsheathed it. I ran my thumb along the edge. Dull. It hadn't seen a whetstone in years. I put it back.
His people have always been here. Course, his lordship's father was a worshipper of the Ever Queen.
She said the word like it was a curse.
Most of the wards were. But not him. Bit too much blood in the jade, Sepesh said, and laughed at her own joke.
And what about the people around here? Were they worshippers of the Lady of Leaves as well?
So they said.
She tapped the side of her nose.
But the old ways came back quick enough when his lordship took over. He figured this had always been the old stag's territory, and it seemed a bit rude to worship another god, even if she was the one who tamed him, I said.
There were letters as well, wrapped in green ribbon. The writing on them was delicate, not Mern's. Sepesh's eyes narrowed.
You know the story?
I know lots of stories. I considered the letters for a moment and then closed the trunk. Whatever they contained was of no importance to me. Sepesh kicked the trunk as I stood.
Why would anyone leave a perfectly good weapon locked away like that?
Maybe he thought he didn't need it anymore. I scanned the shelves on the walls. Bric-a-brac covered them. Someone else's mementos, now covered in dust. I picked up a box and opened it. Inside was a lock of hair, wrapped in a ribbon. Green as well. I didn't touch it. Let's check the other bedroom. The second bedroom belonged to a girl. Young, I judged. Barely more than a child. The crude decorations, a few homespun clothes, the corn husk doll on the pallet. All of it spoke to a girl, rather than a woman. Mern hadn't seemed the fatherly type. Then again, people changed. I had, after all. I felt the temperature in the room dip. Slowly, I turned. The Geist stood in the corner, watching me. She was only a child. She looked at me with black eyes and a hole-like mouth, and clutched at her chest. There was something red there, and I remembered my dream of the green place.
Oh, I said softly. Nothing in here, Sepesh said from behind me.
I blinked. The Geist was gone.
You say something, Blackwood?
No, I looked at her. When did they die?
A while ago, she shrugged. Not my business.
No, I suppose not. This is a farm. What did they grow?
Now you're interested in agriculture.
I told you, I like to know things. Sepesh twitched her head.
Out back.
I followed her through the house to the back door. It opened onto the swamp, but between the house and the trees was a field of jade stalks.
Green corn, I murmured.
The stalks rose in irregular rows from the shallow, emerald-stained waters and stretched back into the trees. They were higher than a man was tall, but splotched and wilted-looking. The stalks rustled in the breeze, swaying above the waters, revealing a stone archway and what might have been the top of a wall. A ruin sitting at the heart of the field. I felt a slight chill as I studied the distant edifice.
wondering what it had been before time claimed it, just like the lumber mills and sunken houses. Wald reminded me of a cheap death mask stretched over the bones of something greater. Or like a hunter wearing the skin of something they'd killed. There were ancient paving stones beneath my feet, and league markers that thrust upwards from the mire like narrow headstones. Time had eaten this place, as it ate everything. It was bigger once, I said. This whole town was bigger once, Sepesh replied. Now it's a spoil heap. She looked at the corn. We should check the barn. We've already checked it. We checked this whole place, remember? Around the front of the building, the chickens began to squawk. The driver of the coach yelled, and we hurried around the side of the farmhouse. What are you yelping at, Fink? Sepesh shouted. She had her hand on her sword and was looking at the trees rather than at her man. She seemed nervous, and that made me nervous. Fink pointed. I saw something go into the barn, something big. A person? I asked. I don't know. With the rain, it looked like a dog. I think it was a dog. He trailed off, quailing slightly, before Sepesh's glare. Keep a tight rein on those horses, she snarled. She looked at the barn and then at me. Your friend might have come back after all. Maybe, I tapped my knife. Let's say we find out. We entered the barn. Sepesh hung her lantern from a hook, casting a soft green light across the interior. The barn looked no bigger than the house from the outside, but the inside was cavernous in comparison. Cobwebs hung from the rafter beams and twitched in the wet breeze. The lofts above were all but black with shadow. The lantern light didn't reach them. A broken wagon sat near the far wall, its wooden panels plump with rot. A stack of rusted iron wheels occupied the opposite corner. Chicken coops full of moldy straw and grass lined the closest wall. Crates of dusty bottles were stacked near the doors. The dirt floor was scarred by the chicken tracks. And something else. I crouched and traced what might have been a boot print. How old, I couldn't say. Someone has been here, Sepesh said, standing over me. The question is, are they still here? I stood. Above us, the lofts creaked. I looked at Sepesh. Might just be the wind. It's never the wind, she said. She went to the closest ladder. Coming? There's no light up there. She laughed and began to climb. I followed. Sepesh drew her sword as she clambered onto the loft. Come out, come out, wherever you are, she half sang. She was enjoying this. I was starting to see why Mern might have run. I'd run, too, if Sepesh was after me. The loft was dark and smelled of wet hay. Sepesh was a blur, creeping across the bales, stabbing her sword into every sizable clump. I stayed on the ladder. I could hear something skittering in the dark. I assumed it was another mouse, hiding from the chickens. But maybe not. My hand was on my knife. When I spied the pale face peering at me from a pile of hay, I almost spoke. But a black, gnarled finger was pressed to non-existent lips, and the words died in my throat. The face curled up like strips of bark, and a long, wide crack of a smile greeted my silence. The thing vanished a moment later. It hadn't gone far. I could hear them now. They were creeping through the rafters and slithering along the walls, watching Sepesh stab the hay. And they watched me as well, with eyes as black as pitch, for all that they were hideously alive. The smell of them, like a forest after a torrential downpour, nearly overwhelmed me. They did not attack, but merely watched. An attentive, silent audience. I hardly dared to move. Were they here for me again, to finish what they'd started in the mill? One of them dropped silently to the loft and rose, marionette-like, behind Sepesh. As I watched, frozen, it mimicked her movements, much to the apparent amusement of its fellows. But so silently, so swiftly, that she didn't notice the shadow play going on, a handbreadth away. Sepesh, I said. I drew my knife slowly. The word echoed more loudly than I expected. Even as it left my mouth, the treekin were gone. I looked around, but saw not even the slightest hint of their presence. They'd vanished utterly. I let out a slow breath. What? Sepesh said, her frustration evident. I don't think there's anything up here. I didn't think it wise to mention what I'd seen, not least because I wasn't sure the treekin wouldn't use it as an excuse to kill us both. Maybe it was just a chicken, or an eel. Sepesh crouched at the edge of the loft and looked down. She frowned. Maybe. She peered over her shoulder. I was certain someone was up here, though. If they were, they're not here now, I said as I descended the ladder. Sepesh followed a moment later. The barn felt different to how it had before, as if it were truly empty now. I reckoned the treekin were gone, but I had no intention of testing that theory. We left the barn. It was still raining, but with less intensity. In its place, the wind rushed down through the trees and stirred the corn. It reminded me of a voice I'd heard in my dreams, calling out from a great distance. I glanced back at the barn and saw something pale watching us from the dark square of the doors. A gnarled taproot claw gestured to the farmhouse. The thing was gone a moment later. We should be getting back. Sepesh started towards the coach. I'll take you back to the inn. I can make my own way back. But in the morning, I'm staying here tonight. She hesitated. Then she nodded slowly, her suspicion evident. I'll leave you to it, then. But heed me. If Mern shows up, I want to know about it. You understand? I gave a lazy salute. We're on the same side, Sheriff. She swung herself up into the coach. See that you remember that, or it'll go badly for you. Of that I have no doubt. The driver snapped the reins and the coach clattered out of the yard. I watched it depart with a sense of relief. Mern had wanted me here, that much was evident. I glanced back at the barn, but the Sylvaneth were gone. I wondered what part they were playing in this. Maybe they were just observers. I watched the chickens hunt mice. What have you got yourself into, Evric? And why ask me to get you out of it? There was no answer save the soft whisper of rain.
Chapter 19 Mern. I didn't often dream, or rather, I had the same dream to the exclusion of all others. In it I stood again in that ruined chapel, my nostrils full of smoke. I heard Osmol and Mern, Pharos and the others, as they fought, and the screams of those who were burning in their cages of iron and gold. Censers swung, filling the air with pungent incense, as the faithful in their blue robes turned towards us, their golden masks set in eternal scowls.
"Have you come to offer up your soul to him?" one asked.
I recognized Archlector Cassian's voice.
"The war awaits. Sigmar calls."
He always asked the same question, and as always my answer was the same. I lifted my hammer and charged. Lightning flashed overhead, drawing up the shadows and illuminating the scene starkly. They came for me then, and I fought. All of us fought. But slowly, so slowly. Too slow to save those who were burning. Too slow to do anything but avenge them. Blue-robed bodies dropped with every swing of my hammer. Golden masks crumpled, and censers rolled forgotten across the cracked floor. Masks fell away, and I recognized the faces behind them. Men and women, officers and nobles, true Sigmarites all. So true that they decided to offer up as many souls to the God-King as possible. Worthy souls, fit to be remade in his image. That was what Cassian had claimed. I swung the hammer until my arms were heavy and my heart raged in my chest. Rain fell in dark sheets through the broken roof. Screams echoed as greasy trails of smoke coagulated on the air. They called out the name of my god as they fought, and so did I. But they were false, and I was true. At least, that was what I'd thought in that moment. Later, I realized Sigmar had been listening, just not to me. Thunder rumbled, a god's roar, lightning split the sky. And then I woke up. I always woke up at the same moment, just before it all went wrong. I didn't know whether to be grateful to my subconscious or annoyed. Blearily, I looked around. For a moment, I didn't know where I was. The air tasted of smoke, and I realized the fire I'd kindled in the hearth had died down to a red edge. I sat up carefully, my back and hips protesting. I'd fallen asleep at the table. The sun was a dull slash of grey-green on the horizon, and the rain had slowed to a drizzle. Several of the books I'd found in Mern's room sat on the table, open at various pages. Nothing in them was helpful. Some were volumes of herbology or travellers' guides to places I'd never heard of before. Like Murghast. Others were various histories of the cantons of the Greywater Reach. Wald was barely mentioned in any of them. It had never been big. The swamps in this area had been home to a number of backwater clans, the sorts of people who'd survived by being unnoticed, or because they'd had help. Humans and Treekin had an uneasy relationship at the best of times. Out here it hadn't been the best of times for centuries. Greywater fastness was a sore point, a tumour of iron and fire, grown in the green body of Gyron.
The treekin had done their best to excise it more than once. They'd failed. Elsewhere, however, they'd been more successful. Dozens of towns and camps had vanished overnight, almost a century ago, leaving the fastness isolated and alone. Wold was one of the few surviving communities, and most historians put it down to the descendants of those original clans, knowing how to appease the mercurial treekin. What form that propitiation took was vague, rumors and innuendo. I was good at reading between the lines. Between what was in the books and what I'd learned, I reasoned the treekin weren't protecting Wold so much as what the town was built on or near. Cassian had taught me many things. One of those lessons had been that you had to be careful in places such as this. There was an order to things that couldn't be ignored or disrupted. The church had tried to do so early on, lectors and missionaries sent abroad in their realms, to bring the light of heaven to the faithful. They'd built shrines where none had been before, or worse, built over ones that already existed. Sigmar wasn't the only god, but some among the faithful thought he was the only one worth the name. And it wasn't only Sigmarites who thought that way. Nothing but trouble came of that sort of thinking, though. I knew that from hard experience. I groaned and stretched. As if in reply, there was a clatter from the larder, and I realized what had woken me. I stood, quickly but quietly. The larder door was open, and stood between me and whoever was rifling through Mern's stocks. My hand fell to my knife. As I reached for it, however, the door was jerked closed, revealing a leveled pistol. Mern looked older than I remembered. He was still tall and built strong, a soldier's build. But age had worn him down. His pale hair was thinning, and his face was grizzled and seamed. He wore homespun clothes and heavy boots. Braces of leather protected his forearms. His clothes were stained, and the scrum of beard on his face spoke of rough living. The pistol he held was single-shot and of good quality, though an antique. Evrek, I said, my hand frozen just shy of my knife.
It's been a long time, Mern said.
The pistol didn't waver.
Sit down, would you?
I backed up and sat down. Mern circled the table and sat down opposite me.
Well, now, I was wondering if you would wake up. You always were a sound sleeper.
I sleep the sleep of the just. Mern laughed.
You never believed that, even when you were a priest.
True.
What are you calling yourself these days?
Blackwood. Haran Blackwood.
Blackwood?
I thought it sounded good. I shrugged. How did you find me, Evrek? I haven't heard from you since you tried to kill me.
It took some doing.
He didn't elaborate. I leaned back. Who else knows?
No one.
Mern frowned.
I always figured that you wanted me to kill you that day. That's why you didn't fight back.
I was drunk. Mern shook his head.
I've seen you fight drunk. You could have stopped me. You didn't. You wanted me to kill you.
So why didn't you? It came out like an accusation. Mern looked away first, but he didn't lower the pistol.
You came alone.
Who would I have come with?
Good point.
Why am I here, Everick? I said, watching him. I wondered whether I could get my knife into him before he pulled the trigger. So you can kill me?
No.
The Geist echoed Mern. She stood behind him, staring at me. I didn't like the way she looked at me.
Why would you think that?
He sounded insulted. You seem to have done well for yourself. I looked around. A wife, a daughter, a farm. I smiled. Never figured you for the marrying kind, or the farming kind. It was a cruel thing to say, and it showed on his face. The pistol twitched, and I knew he wanted to shoot me. But he didn't.
I'm neither, now.
My condolences. His expression didn't change.
I wouldn't be here now if it hadn't been for you.
You didn't have to come with me that night, Everick.
Of course I did.
He bowed his head.
And I'd do it again. It was the right thing to do.
He leaned back in his seat. All the anger seemed to have drained out of him, and he looked exhausted. I wondered when he'd slept last. Why did you send the coin? I asked. Why call me here, only to greet me with a loaded pistol? Why the runaround? I paused. Did you really try to kill Lord Wald?
I did, and next time I'll finish the job, he said. And as to the runaround, because I wasn't sure it was you, I didn't know whether you'd actually come.
Well, I did. Now set the pistol down and we'll talk. Mern licked his lips. He looked tired, hungry, a man on the run. The little Geist clung to Mern, and he shuddered slightly. He didn't know she was there, but I knew he could feel her. He probably thought it was a draft or nerves. I wondered how she'd died. From the look of her, I thought I knew the answer to that. If I was right, it also explained why Mern had tried to kill Lord Wald. Mern plucked at his bracer, and I saw a flash of ink. No tattoo? I asked. His eyes flicked down and then up.
Things got bad before they got better.
How long were you in Ironhole? He paused.
Long enough.
Is that how you ended up here? Did you come in on one of those barges people keep talking about? He shook his head.
Not exactly. It doesn't matter. The barges, it's good you know about them.
They're why I asked you here. His expression became pleading.
I need your help, Haran. It's all happening again.
The Geist was crawling on the ceiling now, moving in skittering circles like an insect caught by the light. She hissed at me and stiffened abruptly. Outside, the corn rustled in the breeze. The chickens began to squawk. Mern rose from his seat, eyes wide.
You said you came alone,
he spat accusingly. I did. I saw a shape flash past the window. I wondered if Sepesh had come back. If she had, she couldn't have picked a worse time. Mern spoke quickly.
They're here. You have to go. Don't let them catch you.
He turned as if to flee. I caught him by the arm. Who's here? What's going on, Everick? I dragged Mern around to face me. I can't help you if you don't tell me what's going on. I had my knife half drawn. I wouldn't get a better chance. But I didn't. I couldn't. Something in his eyes stopped me. Maybe I had never really intended to do it. Maybe, faced with the point of no return, I found that I was still too much of the man I had been. Or maybe it was something else. The moment came and went. Mern shoved me back. Surprised, I fell against the table, upending it.
"The fireplace, Haran," he said in a rush. "Check the fireplace."
Then he darted for the back door. I scrambled to my feet and gave chase.
"Evric, wait! Wait, damn you!"
I heard the door thud behind me. Someone was trying to get in. I ignored it and raced out to the field behind the house. The corn stalks hissed, swaying. I followed the motion. Something, someone, moved swiftly away from me, down into the corn. I couldn't let Mern get away, not now, even if I had no idea what was going to happen when I caught up with him. I leapt down the muddy incline and plunged into the greenery. Water lapped at the bottoms of the stalks and slapped at my knees as I splashed through the rows. The stalks moved and shifted around me, as if guiding me in my pursuit. More than once I slowed, thinking I'd seen something out of the corner of my eye. But it was only the stalks, twitching in the breeze. Mern was making no attempt to hide his presence as he crashed through the rows, heading towards the heart of the field. I knew somehow that he was heading for the ruin there. I followed, shoving through the corn. Behind me I heard muffled shouts. Instinct prompted me to slow as the ruin came fully into view. It sat on a hummock of raised earth just above the waterline. No hint of what it had once been remained, for it was crumbled and overgrown now. Stone walls loomed amid a shroud of greenery, and the archway of what had possibly once been a gate. A domed tower had collapsed in on itself, and its jade remains spilled across the paved ground beyond the archway. Crows took flight from the walls as I emerged from the corn and hauled myself up onto the hummock. Their harsh cries sounded almost like laughter. I moved towards the archway, straining to hear. But the only sound was the hiss of the corn and the distant croaking of frogs. There was no sign of man. Beyond the archway, the ruin was smaller than it had first appeared. I wondered if it had been a chapel once, a place of worship for whoever had built it. But whatever it had once been, it was something else now. Water dripped from fallen timbers and ran in thin rivulets across the cracked stones. There had been a fire here at some point. Thick vines of swamp ivy hung down the walls, and a shroud of greyish moss obscured the wall tops. Bulbous mushrooms clumped in the corners or thrust up through the cracks in the stone floor. The remains of a cistern occupied the center of the ruin, its bronze lid turned emerald from verdigris. Corn husk sigils in the shape of an antlered head had been strung from the rim, all connected by a chain of woven vines. Ivy strangled the stone base, and water stains streaked the parts of it that were still visible. Golden grotesques, wrought in the shape of a woman's face, decorated the sides of the cistern. They peered at me through the curtains of ivy, each face bearing a slightly different expression. Amusement, sadness, wrath.
"The Lady of Leaves," a voice said from behind me.
I whirled. A wind kicked up, and the corn rippled like waves of green water. I heard the ivy stir behind me, and tensed. Crows hurtled upwards.
"She is here, even now,"
though this place is no longer hers. The voice echoed through the ruin. I recognized it now. Fulda. Yes. I turned. He stood in the archway, wearing a half-mask made from corn husks, moss, and vines, with two great antlers curling above his head. He was stripped to the waist, his weathered frame marked with curling bramble-like tattoos. He held a small sickle in one hand and flicked it out, chopping through a nearby cornstalk. As if that had been a signal, more of them appeared, standing in the corn, surrounding the ruin. They bore no weapons, but they were all wearing similar masks. A dozen of them that I could see, perhaps more that I couldn't. "You shouldn't be here," Fulda said. "This place isn't for such as you." "No, I suppose not." I raised my hands. "What is this place? A temple?"
"Once, before the forces of Azir came, with their talk of starlight and iron. But when have the cold stars ever cared about the doings of men?"
The old man scraped the sickle across the stones of the wall, as if to sharpen it.
"We live here, on this land. We are born here. We bleed here, and we die here. Pray for the huntsman. The old stag is the only god that matters to us. And we know that we matter to him. He needs us, and we need him.
In the same way cattle need a farmer." Fulda shrugged.
"We eat of the land, and the land eats of us. And that's the way it's been since the first of us set foot here. It's a fair enough bargain, the way we see it."
"Better than the alternative, you mean?" I turned slightly. The others were drawing closer now, closing in on me. They sounded as if they were singing softly under their breaths, though the masks made it hard to tell. I could hear something else as well. The same sound I'd heard in the barn. The corn swayed as if unseen shapes moved through it. I saw something creep past a gap in the wall on four legs. The hounds of the huntsman. That was what they were, these twisted Sylvaneth. The others might serve the Everqueen, but these had a bloodier master. They were the hunting dogs of Kernoth, as much as, or more so, than Fulda and his lot.
"They flooded us," Fulda said. "Drowned us and dragged us down. 100, 200 drops in the bucket, in those early days when the Lady of Leaves made war on Greywater Fastness."
He gestured with his sickle.
"My grandfather told me about it. He'd been just a child then, but he'd seen the waters rise and the swamp heave. And he heard the ground crack and twist, swallowing the lumber mills and the camps. The dark water getting higher and higher, people climbing onto their roofs, praying for help, begging, pleading."
"But there was no help," I said.
"There was help, but not from her. Someone heard us. Not who we thought. We had forgotten him, left him in the dark. But he heard us then, and answered."
"Kernoth," I said.
Outside, the Sylvaneth set up a howl. Fulda paused.
You aren't fit to say that name.
Maybe not, but I said it anyway.
That is the least of your sins. Where's the traitor? Where's Mann?
Good question. Where is he? Fulda gave me a basilisk stare.
I have no patience for games, city man. Tell me what I want to know, or I'll offer your heart up to the huntsman myself.
You can try. Fulda grunted.
Have it your way. Buell!
I heard them before I saw them. Buell was clad like the others, but unlike them, he bore a truncheon and swung it with brute efficiency.
Now you'll pay, he snarled.
I caught the blow on my shoulder and fell back against the wall. Another blow struck me in the small of my back. I staggered, and a third blow turned me around. I swung wild, catching a man on the jaw and dropping him. Buell roared and swung at me again. I went for my knife. Fists thudded into my side and against my head, but I took them and struck out in return. The shrine was small, and they fell over each other in the mud, shouting and cursing. I stomped on hands and kicked heads. I whipped my knife out, and Buell screamed. I saw him stagger back, clutching at his arm. I took the opening. I turned and dived towards Fulda. He backpedaled, his eyes widening in his mask. I tackled him, hard, and we went through the crumbling wall in a cloud of dust and stones. He gasped in pain as we rolled down into the corn. He lay wheezing as I staggered to my feet. The old man had absorbed the brunt of the impact, but I'd taken my share of bruises. I kicked Fulda in the head as I stepped over him, breaking his antlers. I heard shouts, but I was fairly certain I could lose them in the corn. I doubted they'd follow me. After all, they knew where I lived. The Sylvaneth, on the other hand, had no reservations. As I ran, they gave chase, barely glimpsed, dog-like shapes racing through the corn to either side of me. They made no sound, save the slap of stalks against shaggy limbs of bark and vine. I headed for the farm. If I could get inside, barricade myself, I might stand a chance. Out in the open, I was as good as dead. My breath burned in my lungs as I ran. A dog shape burst from the stalks, lunging for me. The impact knocked me sprawling into the water. Jaws snapped for my throat. I stabbed the shape with my knife, hacking at the vines of its neck. It whipped away from me with a screech, and I didn't wait to see where it went. I struggled to my feet. The farm was in sight. Teeth sank into my boot as I made to scramble up the incline. I clawed at the wet earth as it tried to drag me back into the corn. Cursing, I rolled onto my back and kicked it in the head. Wood cracked, and it released me. I scrambled up the slope and flung myself towards the house. I stopped just before the door and turned. The dog things crouched at the edge of the field, mossy tongues lolling. They whined and hissed as they paced back and forth. Something prevented them from coming any closer. I thought of the symbols I'd seen, cut into the hearth, and almost laughed. The shrine might have been dedicated to a new god, but not Mern's farm. But while the sigils might have stopped the Sylvaneth, I knew they'd have no effect on Fulda and his crew. I heard them closing in as I slammed the door and bolted it.
It wouldn't hold for long. As I ran, I cast a glance at the hearth. But there was no time to stop. One of them was waiting for me at the front door. As I opened it, he lunged for me with a corn knife. I avoided the blow and responded in kind. I left him with his guts spilling onto the ground. His screams and the frustrated howls of the Sylvaneth followed me all the way back to the road. Chapter 20. The Shape of It. "So they just let you go?" Gint said. I shrugged. "They weren't after me. They wanted Mern. We'd retired to our room after I'd made it back to town, soaked to the bone, aching and footsore. I'd wanted somewhere out of sight to think. Gint had come because he was nosy, or bored, or both. Now he sat on his pallet, playing cards against himself, while I tried to figure out what I was going to do. How do you think they found you?" "Fulda," I said, scanning the street below. I'd sent off a message with Scoper, the pickpocket, earlier. Now I was waiting to hear back from Pender. If he could do what I asked, I'd have my next move. If not, I'd need to come up with another plan. "Fulda, the old man?" "That's the one. He's the local hetman, or high priest, maybe." "Sometimes it's the same thing," Gint said. I grunted. Maybe I could just leave. I could buy passage on a barge, get back to the main road. A few days of travel would take me to another canton. From there I could arrange transport to Headwater Breach or even back to the city. Even as I thought about it, I knew I wouldn't. I was in too deep now, angry and curious in equal measure. I wanted to talk to Mern. I wanted to find out what was going on in this shitty town that stank of blood and death. "Think he was acting on behalf of his lordship?" "Maybe." I thought about Buell. Would the big guard have been there without his lordship's approval? Or Sepesh's, for that matter? That didn't surprise me. I couldn't imagine a group like Fulda's existing without tacit approval from Lord Wald. Maybe he just decided to kill two birds with one stone. "So what did he say?" Gint asked. "Man, I mean." "Nothing much." I stared out the window. There were lights in the streets. Something was going on. They interrupted us before he could tell me anything of substance. "Convenient." "Not really." I turned to him. "What's going on out there?" "The barges are arriving soon, or so I hear." He was laying his cards down, one atop the next, all in a line. "People line up on the quays to cheer as they come through this part of town." "Where do they go from here?" Gint looked up. "Apparently there's a quay out in the swamp, near where the old lumber mills were. They unload the barges and take the prisoners the rest of the way via skiff. Some are brought into town, others to the manor, and the rest..." He shrugged. "What happens to the ones brought into town?" "They work, repairing bridges and paths, mostly." "And the manor?" "I think we both know the answer to that." I thought about the man without a tongue, sewn into a bramblehorn skin. "And the rest, what happens to them?" "No idea." He didn't look at me as he said it. He was either lying or he had a theory. "How did you find all this out?" Gint scratched his chin. "Amazing what people will tell you when they think they're winning." He grinned. He shuffled his cards back into the deck and stood. "Speaking of which, I have a game to get to. Will you be all right?
Why wouldn't I be?
Gint smiled. No reason that I can think of. Other than your habit of getting jumped by people you've annoyed.
Get out of here before I shove those cards down your throat, I said.
He laughed and departed, leaving me alone with my thoughts. Not a place I enjoyed being. I watched the rain pelt the window. I was cold, more so than normal. After Akshi, I had trouble with the cold. It never got this wet in the city. Too many rooftops to catch the rain. Too much heat billowing from the forges and bakeries. The rain reminded me of being on campaign, of marching through the ruins of Green Glades. It had rained there as well. A hot rain, though. Sweltering. Rain so as to boil a man in his own skin. Not like this. I thought about the last time I'd seen Mern. In the days after, before any of us realized the full implications of what we had done. Not just spiritually, but legally. I had been confined to the local temple as my superiors tried to learn the truth of the matter. The reverberations of the deed had echoed through the corridors of the church. Not just in Hammerhal, but beyond. To Azaheim itself, or so I'd been told. I'd killed an arch-lector. I'd killed prominent people. It had happened before, but the accusations I'd made, the evidence, even the Order of Azir couldn't hide it all. People started to whisper, and those whispers spread. The others quit the regiment, or simply deserted, over the next few months. But Mern had come to see me. I had been praying, I think, seeking answers in the stars. Sometimes I think Mern intended to free me that day. He'd always had a soft heart and a soft head when it came to that sort of thing. Killing me would have been a mercy, given what happened after. They'd questioned me for what felt like years, but had only been